It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa has the highest rate of worker fatalities and injuries in the Midwest. This hour, we want to find out why. We'll also hear from Iowans working in these more dangerous jobs as we finish up our summer series, Iowa at Work, our Iowa at Work series, both on Talk of Iowa and here on River to River, Mondays during the month of July. Later in the hour, I'll talk with a farmer who lost both of his legs in a combine accident. We'll also hear the story of an electrician who was almost killed in a work accident. And toward the end of the hour, we'll find out why violence is the third leading cause of death in the workplace. I want to reach out to you, our River to River listeners, this hour. Do you work at a dangerous job? Have you been injured at work? Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your question or your comment. Joining us for the entire hour, Kathy Leinenkugel is with us, the Occupational Health and Safety Surveillance Coordinator for the Iowa Department of Public Health. Kathy, in our Des Moines studio, welcome to our program.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
I understand you work on the Iowa Fatality Assessment and Control Evaluation Program, and this is a program that collects information on fatal occupational injuries here in Iowa and also work with prevention messages. Now, I see in my notes that in 2011, more than 18% of Iowa's workers, nearly a fifth of the workers in Iowa, held occupations with a high risk of illness or injury. That's a percentage that's steadily gone up since 2005. And we don't compare well when we look at other Midwestern states. Why does Iowa have such a high rate of fatalities in the workplace, especially compared with other similar states in our area?
Well, unfortunately, it isn't a simple answer. There are a lot of different factors that go into that. We have a high percentage of older workers, and by older we mean 55 years of age or above, but other Midwest states do as well. We also have a lot of self-employed fatalities, and that is a much harder group to do outreach to have them take advantage of established safety protocols, and also to regulate if that's the way we want to go. Last year, for example, there were about 46%, or I should say in 2013, there were about 46% of the fatalities were self-employed, which is different than trying to correct safety issues in a factory or mm-hmm. in an established work site.
And we would put agricultural jobs in that self-employed category.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Why self-employed? How is self-employed work different than in a factory when it comes to regulations?
Well, as more and more of these crews, whether it's construction or in agriculture, are small mom-and-pop jobs, everything from siding to electricians to the roofers, they come on the job. A lot of times they don't have the resources to have a safety officer in place, and they don't have the equipment. Plus, they don't have anybody to spot them, if you will, to work with them and watch out for hazards that the individual worker might not see while they're handling equipment.
Okay. Kathy Leinenkugel is with us of the Iowa Department of Public Health. We want to hear from you. If you work at a dangerous job, if you've been injured, tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. Rick Meister is with us. He is joining us by phone, a Northwest Iowa farmer in the Lakeview, Iowa area. Rick also runs Meister Construction. Hello, Rick.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for joining us today. You've been farming your whole life. You're now in your mid-50s, I understand.
Yes.
Last year, we remember this news story involved you. You were involved in a combine accident. You lost both of your legs. Tell us, how did it happen?
Well, in the last Labor Day, we had some wind come through and it blew the corn down, and I was going through to open up the cornfield because we feed cattle and we were going to yearleach it. The head got plugged, and I have an older combine that where you get up, it don't shut off automatically and stuff, and I left the machine running and went out and unplugged the head. And then when I was unplugging the head, my left leg got caught in the gathering chain, and then so did my right one, went in there too, and stuff. And everything. Mm. So.
Horrible. What did you think at that moment?
Oh,
I think that was the end?
I had about 5 seconds to hold myself back. Otherwise, I was going to go all the way through the machine, yes. Mm. It was horrible.
How did you manage to save your life?
I pressed myself against the head, and good thing my boy, he works as a loan officer at a bank, was following me. Otherwise, I would have bled to death. Mm-hmm. They put tourniquets on me right away. They took their belts off and put their tourniquets around my legs. They were cut off below the knee, one was, and the other one was partially cut off. But then when we got to the hospital, the knees were so bad, they cut them off above the knees. They took both of them.
Mm-hmm. How are you getting along in your first year without most of your legs?
I think pretty good. I'm walking with prosthetics and stuff already, and I get around. I still do farm work. The boys have made an invention of something to get me up in the tractor, and I did all the field work this spring in front of them. We have hand controls in the tractors that, you know, I stop. And a lot of these tractors anymore, you don't need the clutch or brakes to actually stop. You know what I'm saying? It's all in the transmission and stuff you can do it with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you reflect on this accident, as I'm sure you've done very often, every day probably since it happened last year, what is your takeaway about the nature of accidents, the nature of this accident?
It just happens so quick, and it's just a reminder that farming, it's a danger all the time. It don't matter what you're doing. You know, you sit back, and I had my neighbors come to visit me in the hospital, you know, and we're talking about it. It's whatever piece of equipment you pick up, there's a danger, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's something that could go wrong that we don't know about. Yeah, you don't want it to, but it could happen. And like mine, it was a freak accident. It happened as you can't say boo. It happened that fast.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, you know, it shouldn't have, you know, it was a bad deal, put it that way.
You lost your legs. Can you say how this accident changed you as a person?
Oh, it's made me realize I got a second chance. You know, a lot of the people in the emergency room didn't think they took me to SAC and then they were going to fly me to Omaha. A lot of the people didn't think I'd make it back. I'd make it alive and everything. And you just sit back. You're just so thankful. You're so careful now. You do anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know, I have boys that are in the farming operation with us, and it's just, you know, you just want to be careful. And we were always careful to start with, we thought. But
yeah,
that's the way it goes.
You were working with an older machine, an older combine. You say that the newer ones, once you get off the seat, that stops the rotation, that stops the
movement of the machine. It stops the running of the machine. It won't stop the driving. It stops this machine itself, the head, moving and turning. Where I didn't, mine don't have. My machine was in the, it's an 80. To build like 88, you know, and don't have that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Brandy Jansen is with us as well in Iowa City. Brandy Jansen is the University of Iowa Clinical Assistant Professor and Environmental and Occupational and Environmental Health Director at Iowa Center for Agricultural Safety and Health. Brandy, you've listened to Rick's story. How typical is this?
Well, more typical than we'd like to see, certainly. So, you know, these becoming less typical with newer equipment, as Rick points out, that there are a lot of good engineering solutions to problems like this. So a newer piece of equipment where when you get up off the seat, all of that moving parts stop, do a lot to prevent things. But, of course, lots and lots of farmers are using older equipment. Combines aren't usually built to turn over year after year. You buy one to use it for a long time. The same with tractors. So the newer equipment helps a lot, but we still are seeing a lot of traumatic injuries in agriculture throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. Now, as another example of a farm accident, I spoke with a young woman a few years ago who touched an auger before it had stopped spinning, and it wound her arm into the auger. Obviously, a horrible accident there as well. I remember from that conversation, and Rick, you can back me up on this if you want to, that because farming is often – so there are a lot of repetitive tasks there that you can do this 100 times perfectly, and that 101st time you make one small alteration in how you do something, and that can lead to something like this.
Yes, it's that's where I go back to where, you know, we do it every day. We're there. It happens. It's, you know, like you said, it's just one – something happens different, you know, or your mind's some other place. You don't know what – you know, it just – it can happen so fast.
And you had probably – I'm imagining that was not the first time you tried to clear a clogged combine while it was running.
No, you're right. Exactly right. We have done that before, and that's what's, you know, what has happened. That's why it's – and then, like I said, it's a bad deal. And it happened so fast. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was very lucky. My boys were very close. Otherwise, I would have bled out, bled to death.
Mm-hmm. We're glad you're with us to tell the story, yeah. And to help others realize the dangers all around them, especially on the farm. Let's go to our phones. If you have a story of having been injured at work at a dangerous job, nearly a fifth of Iowa's workers are in jobs that are classified as dangerous. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Davenport. Bill is with us from Davenport. What's your experience or question, Bill?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling in regards to construction work. There's a warehouse we're working on, Muscatine, by a company, parent company of Brandt Construction, High Brand Industrial Contractors. As an insulator there, we've been subjected to unsafe conditions. Company refuses to provide us with the proper safety equipment. And when we did bring up the issue, we were actually verbally and physically assaulted on the job. But the bigger picture in all of this is the fact that the state has cut funding for OSHA oversight, and there are only two individuals for the entire state that oversee these types of issues. And that falls strictly on the lap of our governor and our legislators, and they should be ashamed of it.
Bill in Davenport, let's get Kathy Leinenkugel of the Iowa Department of Public Health to respond. Kathy, do you see a tie-in, these cuts, with problems, in this case, Bill pointing to the construction sector?
My program is actually funded by NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, which we have no regulatory oversight. We're looking at it from the surveillance, finding the numbers to have the data for other people to make decisions on. And one of the statistics that we do calculate every year is how many people that work in Iowa are under OSHA oversight and how many of them have had an inspection in any given year, and it's less than 1% of the site. So the funding of OSHA and the number of workers is typical of a lot of jobs in government where the laws are on the books, but to actually implement them is really very hard to do with the number of employees we have.
Kathy, what do you make of Bill's story of his description of the workplace climate, where who should know better than the workers themselves,
right,
about how hazardous something is and what needs to be corrected, and they're not being led to remedy those situations.
Right. I would recommend that anyone who's in a situation like that, if they know that they are in a hazardous conditions and they've tried to address that through their management and have been met with the types of conditions or the outcomes, they need to make a complaint to OSHA and spell that out. They can do that by phone, and they can also do it online.
Mm-hmm. How protected are they against losing work?
I've made complaints myself, not for work, but seeing, for example, lack of fall protection in construction in my area, and OSHA will protect the confidentiality of the person.
Okay, Bill, I hope that helps you a little bit. Sorry to hear about your workplace story there. Thank you for joining us, Bill in Davenport.
Thank you.
Jeff is with us calling from Iowa City. Jeff, as we talk about Iowa's most dangerous jobs that are on our At Work in Iowa series, what do you want to chip in?
Well, I'm a little frustrated that at the end of the Clinton administration, through executive actions, he put in measures on ergonomic standards and tuberculosis standards, which were much needed. But he didn't do it until the very end of his administration. So as soon as Bush came in, he immediately revoked him, and it didn't happen. I'm just curious what your guests would think about going back to stronger provisions on ergonomics and tuberculosis.
Mm. Kathy, in Des Moines, any idea here?
When you look at non-fatal injuries that require days off work, the number three category is healthcare, and a big part of that is musculoskeletal disorders or caused by lifting and patient handling. And that's not just in hospitals, but long-term care, home care workers. So it's the ergonomics that's the caller was mentioning, and that is a big concern. It costs in the long run. It costs employers a lot of time with or funds because of the days off or the reassignment of positions that they have to do for these people that are getting hurt. Plus, as we have a shortage in the area of healthcare, there used to be this idea that you could just kind of use up workers and throw them away because there'd always be a lot more workers out there. And in all industries right now, they're having a shortage of workers that are qualified to do the jobs. So it's really important that the employers work to find out how can they have the employees do the work and keep them safe.
Jeff, thank you from Iowa City for that comment.
Thank you.
1-866-780-9100, talking about dangerous work in Iowa. It turns out almost a fifth of Iowa's workers are in what we describe as highly elevated hazardous conditions. These can be farming, construction, and we'll hear some of the other stories. Later in the hour, also a near-death in the construction sector that we'll hear about. Let me turn to you, Brandy Jansen, at the University of Iowa, clinical assistant professor in this area of occupational environmental health. Well, how are you and your colleagues working to lower the rate of, say, farm injuries and fatalities? What is the easiest way to do that? We know we can't unfortunately make that number zero, but it sounds like we can make a good attempt at lowering this rate.
Well, we hope so. It's a difficult – agriculture in particular is sort of a difficult industry in part because most people are self-employed. Farmers often work alone. And there really isn't the reference to OSHA earlier. There really isn't a regulatory structure. So unless you employ more than 11 people per year – that is 11 people who are not closely related to you. Of course, we know often farmers employ their siblings and their parents and their kids, so that often makes them exempt from OSHA oversight, not technically the standards, but they will not be inspected. For our part, the center I direct, Iowa Center for Agricultural Safety and Health, we work with a statewide set of partners. Kathy Leinenkugel is one of them at the Department of Public Health. A number of farmers, outreach folks, extension personnel, and our role is really sort of more the educational component. Sometimes it's the reminders, right? Mm-hmm. And as Rick pointed out, these are tasks that people do every day, year after year. They become very comfortable with them, and then, as he noted, a moment looking the wrong way can be really traumatic. So our role is to sort of keep safety at the forefront, hopefully, of farmers' minds.
Brandy, are there misconceptions that you run into that you are even held by farmers who do these jobs when it comes to safety?
Well, I think people become comfortable. They say, I've done this for so long. So what I hear from farmers a lot is that they're much more likely to sort of be concerned maybe about the next generation of farmers. Mm-hmm. The older farmers in particular, they've done this for years, their whole life. They're very comfortable with the tasks. So I asked a farmer friend of mine not too long ago, I said, do you have a rollover protection system on your tractor that you use? And he said, no. And I said, why not? And he said, I just don't think I'm going to roll it. So there's when you do this day in, day out, every day, you become really comfortable. You might be thinking about your kids. You might be thinking about your neighbor. Often farmers can point out when they see their colleagues doing something less than safe. But sometimes it's hard to convince the individual that take a moment, take a break, stop and think, you know, before maybe you make a repair on moving equipment, turn it off, those sorts of things. So we try to remind farmers of that as gently as we can.
Rick Meister, before we say goodbye to you, you've been in farming for many decades. You must have noticed that it's getting safer. We're making progress, both in awareness and in equipment.
Yes, it's getting a lot safer and stuff. You know, we grew up with pickers where it was a lot more dangerous, where the people lost. It's equipment's a lot better. It just, you know, it's the industry has come along a long ways, and they're moving in the right direction. It's just, you know, it was like Brandy says, it's hard to change people. You do things, you know, different ways and stuff and everything like that.
Kathy Leinenkugel, you talked about age earlier. We've got to go to a break. I hope can you stay with us for the second half hour?
Yes, I can.
Okay, very good. Talk a little bit about we talk about Iowa being a place with more fatalities, more injuries. You mentioned age. How does that play in?
Well, what they usually see across all industries is that young workers are more likely to have an episode or an incident that causes an injury, but they're able to bounce back from it, where an older worker, maybe because of their experience, they have fewer injuries. But when they do get injured, they tend to have a more severe injury, and they have more risk of complications from that injury. So, for example, if they have falls are a leading cause of injury in both fatal and non-fatal. And if you have an older worker who has a fall, the chance of them having a disability from that or even a death from that is more likely.
Okay, stay with us. Kathy Leinenkugel of the Iowa Department of Health. Thank you very much for sharing your story so that others may learn. Not an easy story to hear or to have in your life. Rick Meister, Northwest Iowa farmer, also running Meister Construction. Rick, thank you.
Yep. Very, very honored to be on the program with you guys.
Brandy Jansen, thank you. University of Iowa Clinical Assistant Professor and Occupational Environmental Health Director at Iowa Center for Agricultural Safety and Health. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk more about other dangerous jobs, a harrowing construction job. The man nearly lost his life. We'll hear about that in just a moment. Also, we want to hear from you if you've experienced violence in the workplace. And we're finishing up our summer series, Mondays in July, called Iowa at Work. And this hour, we are focusing on dangerous jobs, some of the more dangerous jobs here in Iowa. Do you work at a dangerous job? Have you been injured at the work? Tell us at your work. Tell us your story. Also, this half hour, a little bit later, we'll be talking about violence in the workplace and how that can lead to injury and death and why. What are the stories behind violence in the workplace, injuries and the deaths? Joining us, Kathy Leinenkugel is with us in our Des Moines studio, Occupational Health and Safety Surveillance Coordinator for the Iowa Department of Public Health. And in the next few minutes, we want to concentrate on construction. We had much of our emphasis on the agricultural sector in the first half hour as one of the most dangerous areas of work in our state. Kathy, let's talk a little bit more about construction. What can you tell us about why construction is hazardous specifically?
Well, in our preliminary data that we've pulled together for 2014, we had 22 construction-related traumatic fatalities, which is 27% of the total fatalities for 2014 that we've identified. And that was actually the same in number as those in agriculture and forestry and fishing and hunting, which is the other how the category, the agriculture category is called. And of those, the majority were falls. Half of those deaths were from falls. And unfortunately, we've had some falls this year where the workers even were wearing fall protection, but they were not tied off.
Mm-hmm. What trends are you seeing in construction?
We're seeing more of these trends of contractors having subcontractors and the subcontractors ultimately end up being a smaller company that just does not have the knowledge or have the equipment to do a lot of the jobs safely, where if they were at part of a larger company that had a safety officer and had the equipment, whether it's man lifts or other things, they'd be at a lot less risk on the job.
Joining us with your experiences having perhaps been injured at work in construction, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's listen to this story of a near death in the construction field. In 2011, electrician Brandon Schrader was involved in an electrical explosion on the job. It almost ended his life. He spoke with Iowa Public Radio producer Emily Woodbury last week about the incident and what he takes away from it.
August 24th, 2011, I was involved in an arc flash accident. And what an arc flash accident is when you, like when you would unplug a vacuum that was running, you would see a small spark when the plug was unplugged, or if you took jumper cables that were hooked up to a battery and touched them together, you would get a small spark. Well, this was 480 volts. The transformer is very close. Very large transformer, much larger than what we would need for a temporary installation, and a ground wire flopped in there, hit one of the bus, and caused a huge explosion that they heard blocks away. It created a mushroom cloud, and it actually shook the windows in the Great America Building. So there was no way I should have survived that. All they had was a hard hat, safety glasses, and T-shirt, jeans, and boots on. That was it.
Tell us a little bit about why this happened. Were you in a hurry? Is this just kind of a hazard of the job?
No, what had happened was the general contractor came up to me at 3 o'clock and said, we need to get that cord moved. The glazers are coming to put glass in the front of the building tomorrow. Well, when we only had about 15 arc flash suits for around 50 guys, 50 to 60 electricians. So we kind of had to share. Every one of our trucks had an arc flash suit on it. So about a week before this, another guy had asked to borrow my arc flash suit, and I didn't have an arc flash suit that day. And I knew about arc flash. I knew that it could happen, but I had no idea what kind of risks I was taking by getting into that panel without any gear on.
You survived the incident, but you didn't come away unscathed.
No, I went to St. Luke's right afterwards. I checked out my coworker. He couldn't see, so I helped him into the van. I drove him both. I started to drive us to the hospital. Another guy came running out of the building, saw what happened, and he dove in the window as we were going down the street. We were at the hospital within 3 minutes of this happening, and one of my good friends is an ER doctor, and I just kept thinking, if I can just get to him, he can save me. He was working that day. He helped, calm me down, if nothing else. And then I went by helicopter to the University of Iowa, to the burn unit. I was in the University of Iowa for approximately 2 weeks, and then I went to St. Luke's Rehab in Cedar Rapids for another 2 weeks. And then when I came home, I had a nurse come in the house for another 2 weeks. I was off work for approximately 6 months.
You work as an electrical apprenticeship instructor now, so you help people getting into this career learn about proper safety techniques. But when this happened, you had been on the job for, some amount of years. You were pretty experienced in the field. So how can we prevent this from happening to other people?
Well, I think there's a number of things that can be done. Electricians that are been doing this 20, 30 years, it's hard to get this safety culture ingrained into their heads. 15, 20 years ago, safety was not nearly as focused. It wasn't nearly as advanced as it is now. And training is the big thing. I mean, 10 years ago, I had never heard of NFPA 70E, and NFPA 70E is an electrical safety document that OSHA had asked them to produce because of all the workplace injuries and burns that were happening on job sites that they didn't know how to prevent them. And it, you know, OSHA tells you that you shall not do this and you shall not work unenergized work, but it doesn't tell you how to go about doing these things for guys that have to work into the industry all the time. So NFPA 70E is a great tool for anyone that works around electricity, not just electricians, but anyone who works around electricity to basically make sure that you come home safely. There's more accidents happen because someone thinks that a piece of equipment is de-energized or they've shut it off when in fact it is still energized and they just didn't test it. And to most people, it, you know, you think, well, I should have tested that. But there are more electricians electrocuted than, I mean, that's the biggest cause, is they think something's de-energized and it's not. So that training really helps. And if you have policies and procedures in place, kind of like a checklist that this is what you have to do in order to work on energized work, it just keeps everyone organized and makes sure that they're following the proper procedures, because you can't take those things for granted. There's no redos. I mean, you blink your eyes, 1 second you're fine, the next second your life has changed forever if you're still alive with electricity. And you know, there's not a lot of second chances, and I was extremely lucky. I did get a second chance, so I like to use my safety presentation to try to show people what can happen.
Brandon Schrader, an electrical apprenticeship instructor who experienced an arc flash accident, an electrical explosion on the job in 2011, speaking with Iowa Public Radio's Emily Woodbury. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, talking about dangerous work in the state as we conclude our summer series, Iowa at Work. Randy Rayner works in the construction field. He's a former construction worker of many decades, also business manager for the Laborers Local Union 43. Currently, Randy Rayner in our Iowa City studio. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
You listened to Brandon Schrader's harrowing experience there. What is your reaction? How common is this? It sounds like he was pressured. He and his colleagues were pressured to get something done in little time, and that's allowed for, I guess, a lack of safety?
Yeah, you know, the time of day he mentioned, it was towards the end of the day. I'm sure he was thinking, I've got to get this done before I can go home. Sometimes the safety equipment, as he mentioned, wasn't available at the time, and he thought, well, I'll be okay this time. Sort of like what we heard in the first part of the program with farmers. You know, you do something over and over again, and you take chances that you don't really think about until the accident happens.
Mm-hmm. On the construction sites, with your decades of experience, mostly in Johnson County, and it's a big place for construction, very busy due to the University of Iowa, what are the most common types of injury and death in construction that you've seen? What happens on construction
industry,
sites? We heard about falling, for instance, from
Kathy. Industry-wide, the top four are falls. People caught in between objects, electrocutions that Brandon talked about, and people being struck by objects. And so that's what we try to focus on, especially the falls. Fall protection has become a big part of our industry now. That years ago it was sort of dismissed as just something, you know, that's going to happen if it happens.
Mm-hmm. Can we do something better there? Kathy said that the harnesses existed. They weren't clipped in, if I understood Kathy correctly.
Right. There were two workers killed in a fall from a scaffolding out at near the campus of Ames at the Iowa State University on a remodel of a building. They evidently had the harnesses on, but they weren't tied onto the safety ropes. Mm-hmm. And so probably, again, sometimes when we introduce fall protection to workers, they say, well, this restricts me. I can't reach far enough, or I can't. Well, you know, they have to remember that, you know, a fall of many times a fall of over 6 feet can be fatal, you know. Mm-hmm. So
if we have all those protections, the gear and so forth, how much of this is a matter of mindset, is a matter of, I'm just imagining this, I've never worked in construction, overcoming bravado, doing things without protection. Is that a mindset you find out there?
Not as much anymore, but when I became a construction worker in 1980, first job was on a university hospital project running a jackhammer, and I asked, is there any hearing protection? well, we have one pair of earmuffs, but someone else is using them, and do you really think you need them? That type of thing.
So that was the attitude.
Yeah, and sort of the same with safety glasses and those type of things. And at that early in the end, you know, when I first joined, but now the contractors are much more better at providing that equipment. The workers are better about asking for it, and so
we've heard about the rules and regulations from the federal government, but the union is also there to protect the workers.
Yeah, we try to build things into our union agreements that sort of help address things that are shortfalls that we see maybe in OSHA, and also to sort of use their guidelines and expand on them. One of the things we did here a few years ago, there were two fatalities on projects related to the University of Iowa. Following those, we approached the university and asked them if we could become more of a partner in safety with them. And out of that, we now hold a yearly Hawkeye on Safety Conference.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's October 1st at the Coralville Marriott Conference Center. And it addresses the topics that we see. We had, I believe, almost 400 people there last year, and it's really growing now.
Okay, we're talking about workplace safety. Iowa at Work series, Dangerous Jobs this hour on River to River. Let's also include in our conversation Carrie Castile, is a University of Iowa Associate Professor of Occupational Environmental Health. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You do research in workplace violence prevention and small business safety programs. Now, we're talking about dangerous jobs this hour. Violence in the workplace, the third leading cause of death in the workplace nationwide, second cause of death in the workplace for women specifically. Give us some examples of what you're talking about here.
Sure. From a fatal perspective, there are specific types of industries that are at high risk for workplace death. These are businesses that are typically at high risk for robberies. So we see a lot of robbery-related violence, and this occurs in convenience stores, liquor stores, gas stations, taxi cab services also have very high rates of robbery-related workplace violence. Over the years, we've actually learned a lot about how to reduce violence in retail-type settings, also in taxi cab services. So over the years, we've seen a decrease in these types of fatalities, but proportionally more worker-on-worker type issues, as well as intimate partner violence that spills into the workplace.
Shauna is joining us from Winterset on this topic of workplace violence. Shauna, you want to chip in because you work in nursing, I understand?
Yeah, I'm a registered nurse, and I noticed that you're talking about construction work, and I think most people are somewhat familiar with the dangers of that, but nursing is a pretty dangerous field in itself. There's a lot of confused patients, combative patients for different reasons. Most of the time, they're not aware of their behavior, but sometimes they are. Patients who are detoxing, who are older with dementia. I mean, I've been kicked, scratched, spit on. It's a regular thing that we go through. I'm not trying to complain about the work conditions, but it is something that I think most families and people are not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Right. As you say, we associate it very often with construction. We can see it clearly driving by a construction or walking by a construction site. But nursing, Carrie, also hazardous work.
It is very hazardous work. You know, I had spoke about the fatal issues, but from a non-fatal perspective, healthcare is at very high risk for non-fatal assaults. And you see a lot of workers in hospitals, like emergency departments and psychiatric units. You also see workers in like nursing home facilities, residential care facilities, who are at high risk for violence. And these are typically perpetrated by patients and sometimes even the visitors of the patients.
Shauna, have you been injured severely, or in your circle of workers, have there been severe injuries?
There's not been severe injuries. I think it's more that it's a daily thing that we are just kind of accepted as part of nursing. Sometimes it's, you know, a traumatic brain injury, it's a dementia, it's, you know, a seizure, chemical imbalance, detoxing. But I think it's just so accepted that it doesn't really get talked about enough because it's, oh, it's, yeah, they have dementia, so be careful. They can kind of kick or bite. Or patients who have brain injuries and, you know, will be sexually inappropriate towards the staff, which is extremely stressful. And I just don't think people are completely aware of that environment. They think of nursing as, you know, kind, caring people, which we do try to be, and compassionate, but they don't always fully understand the other side of the job.
Mm. Thank you for sharing, Shauna in Winterset. Carrie, tell us, how are you working? How can the hazard to nurses and other types of caregivers, service providers, be lessened?
Mm-hmm. So in healthcare, there's actually large-scale efforts going on, even at the state level with legislation. There's currently California and also New Jersey are a couple of examples where there's legislation that is requiring hospitals to put in security plans to protect their workers from violence. And these programs typically follow OSHA guidelines for workplace violence prevention. And one of the key things that I think gets at the caller's message is, you know, having that management commitment and employee involvement in workplace violence prevention. So really changing that culture of safety in healthcare settings, and that having to be something that comes down, you know, at the administrative level. And then also having workers involved in developing workplace violence prevention policies, serving on violence prevention committees, because as the caller mentioned, workers, oftentimes nurses, aides, they take the violence as just part of their jobs. So getting them more involved in the development of programming in their facility and reporting these incidents would be important.
Okay, let's go to what will be our final caller, Jeanette. Jeanette is with us in Iowa City. Jeanette, what's your story? What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask if the speaker could comment on the Andrea Farrington murder at Coral Ridge Mall recently, which received national press attention because of Iowa's open carry law. There have been a lot of questions raised about whether the mall handled the situation properly and what protections were put in place to protect Andrea before she was murdered.
Okay. This is the case from several weeks back where a young woman was murdered by a security guard, a local private security guard at the Coral Ridge Mall. Kathy Leinenkugel, any comment about that?
This is one of the cases that we have captured as a what we call FACE, our fatalities surveillance. And we haven't made a determination at this point on whether or not we'll do an in-depth. Our in-depth studies don't look to place blame, but they look at what lessons can we learn from this. So what were things that could be done differently to keep this from happening again? And so it's too early in the investigation at this point for us to say what those outcomes would be, but we are as well watching this one.
Okay, not much time left. I wanted to slip in another listener comment submitted by Tim Gannett from Davenport, a truck driver. Lots of aspects in his email to us, but let me just ask you generally two things that he raises. Cell phones, recent steps taken by the federal government to make truck driving safer. Drivers need to use hands-free devices, Bluetooth devices for making answering cell phones. Also for texting, has that that has been a problem, we know. Kathy, are we making an impact there in improving the situation?
There's so many things. Cell phones are just one of them. But for the distracted driving, we did do an in-depth investigation on one as well, where someone had a line of sight of over 1 mile and still was so distracted by his cell phone that he ran almost full speed into the back of a semi that was stopped behind a line of traffic, passing the time. Trying as he went down the interstate. So this is something I just really urge people to, you know, you don't have to have a special app. There's an off button or just the self-control that just because somebody calls you or texts you while you're driving, you don't have to respond at that time.
Okay, Kathy, we have just a few seconds left. What is a place people can start at if they want to have concerns about workplace safety? In a hazardous job, where would be a good website, for instance, or
the
number?
NIOSH. If you Google the NIOSH website, they have lots of information there. IDPH, we have a website as well, and the Iowa FACE program. The IDPH website will be changing to a new URL. So the Iowa FACE website, just go Google Iowa FACE, F-A-C, and you'll have great information.
Kathy Leinenkugel of the Iowa Department of Public Health, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Randy Rayner, thank you very much. As a business manager for Laborers Local Union 43 and a former construction worker. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
And Carrie Castile, University of Iowa Associate Professor of Occupational and Environmental Health. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.